Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, as always, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we got a good one today. We got a great guest today, don't we? Rod Brendamore, Carolina Hurricanes coach, is going to join us. We already did the interview, Sean, but I'm excited that everybody can hear from Rod because I learned something in that interview.
Well, I learned more than one thing. And you know, we talked to him for maybe 15, 20 minutes. I could have talked to him for another hour. And, you know, I think a lot of our younger listeners don't realize what a good player he was before he coached. Like, he was like a Patrice Bergeron. Like, he was the perfect 200-foot player and mean as a rattlesnake. In a time when you had to be mean, right? Like, you don't have to be mean in today's NHL to be successful. And when Rod played, it was a different game, and mean was a prerequisite, except for the most skilled of players who had mean people protecting them. But Rod, I loved watching him play.
You know what? I think his teams mirror the way he played too. Yeah. I think his coaching style mirrors the way he played. His teams mirror the way he played. And we get into a little bit of the players there in the interview. So that's coming up soon. But first, Sean, a potpourri, to steal a word from our producer, Bob Bender, as we just got on here, a potpourri of NHL stuff. And we can lead with the trade deadline because it's really coming into focus. It's April 12th, the trade deadline. We're recording this on Thursday, March 25th. And Philadelphia Flyers general manager Chuck Fletcher addressed the media yesterday, Sean. And I thought it was very interesting what he said. This team is struggling. You don't often hear a GM say this, but he basically said about their defense, it's a bad mix. You don't really hear that from a GM, but he's right.
He is right. And who knew? Well, some people did know, and it was said at the beginning that Matt Niskanen was going to be a huge loss for them. He's not one of those guys that you look at a roster and you're like, oh, Matt Niskanen, they're great. You know, they're going to be set up. But he pretty much evened out their pairs, made their chemistry right, and covered up for a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of defensemen in this league, past and present, who didn't get the recognition they deserved for the role that they do in letting other defensemen who get a ton of credit do what they do. And a guy that jumps to mind for me is Paul Martin, right? Played for the Devils and for the Penguins. And he was just one of those guys that you could throw out with anybody. You could throw out with the craziest offensive defenseman there was, and he would just kind of be like, okay. And he could skate and he could make up for mistakes. And, you know, every really good offensive defenseman has had that guy at some point in his career to make him better. And Matt Niskanen was one of those guys. He was just calm, steady, did what needed to be done, and let other players grab the spotlight.
Yeah. The guy I think of right off the top, as we were talking about it, we'll get into this team next, but Brian Dumoulin with the Penguins. I think since he's returned from injury, they're 8-2-1 now, and he makes Chris Letang is an excellent defenseman. He's much better with Brian Dumoulin by his side than really anybody else. But back to Philly, you look at their D. And because, you know, I knew we were doing this podcast, I have to do some research, Sean. You know, you got to look up a few numbers here. I'm not a big plus minus guy. We've talked about this a number of times, unless it's an outlier. But in this month, when they're 4-8-1 and they have given up 57 goals, 4.38 per game, Travis Sanheim is minus 15. Philip Myers is minus 13. Goss Despair is minus 9. And Prosser is minus 8. That's the bad mix he's talking about here. So here's the question for you. Are the Flyers good enough to want to add a big piece at the deadline right now? I don't know the answer to that. Are they good enough to get ahead of Pittsburgh, Boston? I don't think they're getting ahead of the Islanders or the Capitals. Is it worth it for the Flyers to really go out? I mean, Chuck Fletcher said they're not going to be sellers, and I don't think they should be, but is it worth it for them to be buyers right now?
Yes, it is, because the market demands it. Philadelphia is one of those teams that there's an expectation. And rightly or wrongly, after last year, they said that they were a playoff team, that they had turned the corner, you know, and they had done so well in the bubble. And, you know, AV had come in and had set them right. And this was going to be a continuation of the minor glory that they had last year. And how do you as a GM then say, we're going to stand pat? We don't even know if we can hold off the New York Rangers, but we're going to stand pat. So, you know, I think they look to add, maybe not even just for this year, You know, I think they might take a defenseman with a little bit of term if they think it's going to make them better. But I also think we're missing the major point with the Philadelphia Flyers. You threw around a lot of ugly numbers. The ugliest numbers of all are their goaltending numbers. And Carter Hart's numbers are abysmal. Like, let's not sugarcoat this. And, you know, for all that Carter Hart's been praised since he's come to the Flyers and he's the next – he's the next goalie, you know, he's Pelly Lindbergh, or whoever you want to talk about, Bernie Parent, when, you know, goaltending has been such a bugaboo for them. And he was the answer, right? And he hasn't been the answer this year. He's been really bad. And there's a lot of reasons that go into that. I mean, just think about this year, right? And you're a single guy and you're living alone. And, you know, we've talked about the mental toll of this a lot, and I keep going back to it because I just know how difficult it's been for people that aren't in the spotlight. You and I, we're not in the spotlight very much. And this has been a hard year for me. Some of my stuff has not been as good as it should be. I can't imagine having 20 other professionals count on me to be at my best every night and to deal with what I have to deal with. But he hasn't been good enough. And, you know, Chuck Fletcher said that he has no worries about him. I think that's a little bit of whistling by the graveyard. There's been a ton of people that have come through this game who've had really good 1 or 2 years and never really got back to that. I don't know that Carter Hart's one of those guys. You know, his resume is ridiculous. And Kevin Woodley, who I count on for all of my goaltending information, he does our Unmasked column, you know, sings his praises constantly. And you know, maybe he finds it again. But if they don't have goaltending, they don't have anything. They're not the Edmonton Oilers. They can't cover up for bad goaltending.
Yeah, his numbers this month, 2-5, 8.30 save percentage, and a 4.61 goals against average. That's just this month. That's just in March. So it kind of gives you a small sample of exactly what you're talking about. But they look, we're recording this Thursday. They play the Rangers tonight, and they play the Rangers again on Saturday afternoon. The Rangers are right on their heels and playing well, too. Mika Zibanejad has come alive. You know, Artemi Panarin's back in the lineup, has good chemistry with Ryan Strome. Kreider's got 16 goals this season. The Rangers have come alive. Adam Fox has just been terrific. I'm not even sure that the Flyers can hold off the Rangers at this point, to be honest with you, with the way that they're going. And you mentioned maybe they go out and get a defenseman with term left. That brings in the expansion draft too, though. You know, I mean, you go out and get a defenseman with term left, you're not going to go out and get him with term left if you're not going to protect him, right? So then you're leaving somebody else exposed. And so there's all those scenarios involved as well. I was a big believer in the Flyers going into the season. I'm about to sell on the Flyers right now.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer for them is, but I'm also not that high on the Rangers catching them, right? I think you're
only
looking
2 points
the,
back.
Yeah, maybe, but they go what? Six deep?
The Rangers? Well, it depends on what you're getting out of Filipino and Alexi Lafreniere, which you're not getting much right now. But you're right. No, look, I don't think the Rangers are a playoff team.
Look, you cover the Rangers,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
On a daily basis. Mostly. You mentioned all the guys that are really good on that team, right? So there are six of them, right? There's Buchnevich, Panarin, Strome, Kreider, Fox, Zibanejad. They're the top six scorers.
Yeah.
Who's the seventh scorer on that team?
Well, I can tell you right off the top of my head right now.
It's Colin Blackwell.
Yeah. And he's not even going to stay in the lineup once they have Kravtsov in there.
So you're going to run a playoff team? Name me another playoff team that had, and I'm not slamming Colin Blackwell in any stretch of the imagination. He's an NHL player, and congratulations to him. Name me another playoff team that has Colin Blackwell as their seventh.
Well, no,
scorer.
But I don't think they're a playoff team. That's my point. I think they can catch the Flyers. They're not catching the Penguins. They're not catching the Capitals or the Islanders or the Bruins, but they can catch the Flyers with the way the Flyers are going. Now, like I said, we're recording this Thursday morning. Things change, right? If the Flyers go out and get 4 points against the Rangers in the next 2-3 days, well, now it's a different story because that's how quickly things change in this league. But the way the Flyers are going right now, the only team worse defensively this month than the Flyers are the Buffalo Sabres, who haven't won in 15 straight games. They're the only team worse defensively than the Flyers right now. So I don't know why I should all of a sudden think with the Rangers being able to score goals now and Zibanejad playing well, that the Flyers are just going to become this great defensive team and shut them down for the next 2 days and pull away from them. It could happen. I just don't see why I need to believe that. And the other thing with the Flyers too is, so they play the Rangers too, and then they play Buffalo too. You got to think, you hope you get 4 points out of that with the way the Sabres are going. Then 9 of their next 10 against the Islanders, Boston, Washington, and Pittsburgh, the four teams that are ahead of them. They're going to make it up. I mean, we're going to know within the next 12 or 13 games really here if the Flyers are legitimately in the playoff race or if they're going to be planning to play some golf in the spring.
Yeah, and let's not forget, just for tuning purposes, the last time the Rangers played the Flyers,
nine spot, exactly. Yeah. And that helped turn it around for them. So
yeah, some crooked numbers there. And the last thing on this, and you mentioned it, is I might be as nervous about the Bruins as I am about the Flyers. Right? Yeah. Like they weren't playing well, and now they had COVID. They had five guys off out of the lineup after their game in Buffalo. And important players, and three of them came back last night. They practiced, and three of the players came off of the COVID list. I think it's just DeBrusk and Corrali remain on it. But they can't score. They've had a ton of trouble scoring. Tuukka was hurt. He might play tonight. But they're not the juggernaut that they were early in the year. And, you know, you wonder with a team like that if they can refine that mojo. And if the other thing I wonder about, it's an older team. Is the gas tank emptying? There's been a lot of hockey put on that team, a lot of tread worn off, and now they're playing every other day. And now they've had a COVID shutdown, missed a couple of games. I think they have to play something like 23 games in 48 days. Mm-hmm. That's hard for 21, 18-year-olds to do.
Yeah, I do. But you look, they have Rask and Halak. And, you know, when Tuukka's back healthy, I think that makes a huge difference. And Carlo's getting back healthy too after the hit from Wilson on March 5th. So he's a big addition to the defense if they can come in and he can return too. But you're right. I mean, Boston is not a lock. They're certainly not a lock. I think, to be honest with you, I mean, I think the two locks right now in the East are Washington and the Islanders. And I want to say Pittsburgh could be, but I'm watching them last night, Sean, against the Sabres, and it's Buffalo. They're really struggling right now, and the Penguins do what they have to do. But the entire time I'm watching them, I'm thinking to myself, now Malkin's not in the lineup and Zucker's not in the lineup, but I'm thinking to myself, if everyone's healthy, do they have enough? Like, I mean, when you have, we've talked about this a number of times, right? When you have Crosby, Malkin, and Letang still going, you got to do everything you can to win. And that's what Ron Hextall is tasked with this season, to try to do everything you can to win. So I'm looking around, I'm saying, I don't think they have enough. I don't think they have enough to beat any of the top three teams, the other top three teams in that division in a 7-game series. I think if you're Ron Hextall, you got to make a move here to add scoring depth, because scoring depth has been the biggest issue for them all season, I think. And we know that for some reason, they're injury prone, this team. You know, it's injury prone, and Malkin's out now on a week-to-week basis. So I look at that and I say they're an intriguing team to me because they should be in the market. They should be aggressive.
Yeah, but what are they going to get? And I think they're going to be a better team now. You mentioned Dumoulin coming back. Marino's back. Zach Aston-Reese is back. He's going to provide some scoring for them, secondary scoring. He's got 7 goals now. He scored last night. I think the Penguins are who they are. They don't have much left, right? Like, oh, let's add at the deadline. What are they going to give up?
Well, they don't have a first-round pick this year. In fact, they don't have a first-round pick, a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, or a sixth-round pick, I don't think, this season. So they've given up a lot already.
Rutherford went for it, and when he did, the fans, as is their right, were over the moon. Mm-hmm. And then they won 2 cups, and then things didn't go so well. And all of a sudden, the fans look at the cupboard, and they're like, that Rutherford, he stripped the organization of all its assets. What are we going to do now? And that's where the new people are, right? That's where Burke and Hextall are. Yeah, we'd love to make a trade. Well, like, to me, one of the most intriguing guys out there is Connor Garland, right? If you mm-hmm. can get him from Arizona, Boston, I think, would love to have him. He's a mass kid. Pittsburgh would love to have him. I mean, he brings that sandpaper, that grit, everything that you want, you know, from a player like that. What are you going to give up?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you give up? It wouldn't be the Coyotes because they already had P.O. Joseph. But I mean, do you give up somebody like that, or, you know, a future, you know, another future pick to try to go ahead and try to win another cup? you know, with this group and not worry about the first round picks, because you know you're going to go into a pretty dark rebuild eventually, right? So I don't know.
All I know is if there's bidding wars and Pittsburgh gets in them, they're like the guy at the poker table that has four chips left in front of them and they're trying to bully people. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I just like, and this goes to a story that I'm working on actually with Tampa Bay, because you think about Blake Coleman and Barclay Gaudreau, right? Two guys that they added at the deadline last year who had term left on the deal and are still paying dividends right now. That's where the Penguins have to go if they can, if they have the wherewithal to do it. And it's a good question. I'm not sure if they have the wherewithal to do it, but I'm not looking at rentals or things along those lines. I'm looking at, you know, can they get somebody? Garland would be perfect, obviously, you know, but can they get somebody in there who, you know, really can make a difference, not just this season, but beyond. And I think that's what a lot of teams should be looking at right now. But I don't know. They're interesting to me. They're a team I think that needs more. And with the guys that they have and the window that they have available to themselves, they got to be aggressive to try to see what they can potentially do. It might be nothing, but they got to be out there trying to find every, you know, search under every rock.
Yeah. And they're going to be interesting just because of the guys that they have running the show. Right. I mean, you have Ron Hextall who was really patient with the Flyers. And when they were going good, everybody was like, oh, Ron Hextall built that team. You know, now you can be like, oh, Ron Hextall built that team. And it's more of a stigma. And then you have Brian Burke and Brian Burke is not a shy man. He will go and he will make trades that you will scratch your head at and be like, what is he thinking? And then they pan out and you're like, well, that Brian Burke, he's a pretty smart hockey guy. And he's not afraid of making a mistake. Like to me, that's the biggest thing with a GM is you cannot, once you determine, if you're right, Dan, and you look at the Penguins and you're like, this team isn't good enough. Once you determine that and you plot a course forward, you cannot be afraid of the backlash.
Yeah.
And he won't be.
He won't be. And neither will Hextall, I don't think. So neither one of them would be. All right, before we get to Rod Brind'Amour, before we get into our interview with Rod Brind'Amour, we do have to bring this up. We've talked about the Sabres a little bit. So let's quickly, 0-13-2, the most consecutive games without a win, that 15 now, in the shootout era since 2005-06. And I bring it up from a trade deadline perspective. I'm watching them against the Penguins last night. I'm watching Taylor Hall, and I'm going to myself, who's trading for this guy right now? Sean, who's trading for Taylor Hall right now? And what are you giving up to get Taylor Hall right now? He looks like a guy who's just lost out there sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, he did not put an audition tape up last night.
Not if the Peckman's wanted him.
there was a three-minute period where he made like two really bad drop passes. So the announcers were all over him.
It cost him goals too.
Yeah, it was egregious, right? Like even a non-hockey person could look at that and be like, I don't think that's the point of the game. And look, I feel awful for all those guys, the Jeff Skinner, Eric Staal.
Eric Staal hadn't asked for this.
Right. All of them, right. There was so much hope going into this year. They spent to the cap, you know, and Ristolainen, Dahlin, like I feel bad for all of them. Like I thought last night, like Dahlin gets hit in the face, right. It goes to the bench. At that point, as a human being, you're almost like, that's it. I'm done. My nose is broken. Send me to the room. I'm checking out. And he didn't, you know, put some gauze in it, right back out the door. And, you know, they seem to be fighting for each other, but there's just the confidence is so low at this point. And you wonder if they could just find a way to win a game, if it would turn around and if Don Granato can do it. And
he's an optimist, though.
He is. And so was Ralph. I mean, to the very end, Ralph was an optimist. You know, if we could just win one game, you know, all this will turn around. But wow. Yeah, I don't know. And maybe there are some teams rubbing their hands and saying, well, the price just dropped on Taylor Hall again.
Yeah.
And if we can get him into our system, you know, maybe things are different.
I don't know. I mean, it's not even he's a very talented player, we know that, but I mean, not only did he make the drop passes, then he didn't really back check to recover on the turnovers, and it was not a pretty sight. Eric Staal, I think, can be a valuable commodity for a team that needs some depth down the middle at the trade deadline, and I think he would be very excited to go to another team because he didn't ask to go to this one, for sure. Hall chose the Sabres. So I don't know, but I think Eric Staal could be a nice ad for a team, certainly, that looks for some depth. He's got so much experience too, and knows how to play, knows how to win. So that's the guy. If I'm Buffalo, I'm looking at and saying, if I'm a team looking at Buffalo, and I'm saying that might be the guy I'm looking at instead of Taylor Hall right now.
You know where he'd look good and it barely involved moving? Toronto.
Yeah, you gotta sit for 14 days, but you're right. You're right. No, he would. He would. That's going to be a very interesting part of this deadline, too. Does any Canadian team trade with an American team, the U.S.-based team, because of that quarantine issue? That is going to be a fascinating part of it. But anyway, we've teased it enough, so let's get to the interview. We did it Wednesday. We were able to catch up Wednesday late in the afternoon with Rod Brind'Amour. He was in Columbus. They're in Columbus tonight to play. Here's that interview with Rod Brind'Amour, coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. Rod, thanks so much for hopping on with us. How's the road life in Columbus, a team that you're very familiar with at this point, right?
Yeah, we played them a few times. Road life is what it is. The worst part is the days in between now. Like, I know the schedule is condensed, but we actually had 2 days off here between games, and that's the killer on the road because you really, obviously, there's not a heck of a lot you can do. So, just trying to manage the time properly here. And, we had a good practice today, which was good. And now get ready for tomorrow.
Dan spoke about how you know Columbus so well at this point after playing them numerous times. You're going to play everybody in your division 8 times. Does that change the way you coach at all? In the past, it would be, you know, you go into Columbus, you got to kind of prepare for them on the fly. And then, you know, maybe you go into Detroit and you got to prepare for them. But now a lot of that work, it seems, would already be done. Does it change your preparation or the way you approach these games?
A little. We try not to. Sometimes you overthink it, right? You think, well, I've played this team 3-4 times in a row. We got to start changing things or you got to do that. And then that's actually probably what was worse. Like we all know what we're doing. I think both teams, we know what they're trying to do. They know what we're trying to do. It still comes down to execution, you know, and then the old adage is always there, is always compete in your 50-50 puck battles. That's what this game is all about. So there's little things you do for sure that are slight adjustments, I guess we call them. And, but you don't really want to change your game too much, or I think you're in trouble.
And it's interesting, right? I mean, because I got to imagine, especially in a season like this, Rod, that it would be easy to overthink it because, like you just said, you got all this time, especially when you're on the road, right, to just kind of sit in your room and think about it. So is it something that you have to get it out of your head? Is that a challenge even as a coach?
Totally. Yeah, that's a great point. Like, matter of fact, today is a perfect example. We've been sitting on something as a coaching staff to where these little, I wouldn't call adjustments, but things that you put in to kind of break up the monotony, and it's a slight change in your game. But I'm like, I don't know if it's, and you know, here we are halfway through the year and it's been sitting on our desk since training camp, you know, and it's like, I don't want to put it in yet because I know it'll happen. And you know, you're fighting that because you think, well, do we have to mix it up? And you do, but I think it shouldn't be at the expense of what you're trying to do as a team, you know, your game. You have to always sharpen the knife, like we always say, and, you know, until you get to that point, which you never are satisfied with your game, I think you got to just keep it as simple as you can and true to what you want.
Are you in playoff mode yet? Normally, you know, you get right past the halfway point in a normal season and you're like, oh, I still have 40 games left. But now it's less than 30 once you get past the halfway point. And, you know, clearly there's been no separation. Is it almost a case now where mentally you as a team are in playoff mode?
I think all the teams have been since day one, to be quite honest with you. I think it's that there's that you really feel a sense of urgency in all the games, and I have since we started the season. So I think, you know, it's 56 games, which is still a ton of games, but it just felt like it was so much more important every game. And I see it in the play. I watch games every night. I think the play has been great throughout the league, and the players, especially with having no fans, have really performed, I think, admirably. And I think it's just that added intensity to where everyone thinks that each game counts that much more. And obviously it does.
And you guys have had to, obviously, you know, you've been a very successful team this season, but you got to keep pace with Tampa, with Florida, and you got to keep the other teams at a distance. So what has that been like to try to battle within this division?
Well, it's NHL, right? I mean, every night you go out to win, number one, and there's just no easy nights. And, you know, you mentioned a couple teams that in our division that are obviously playing great, and you know, but it doesn't matter. I mean, we, Detroit, whoever we're playing, it feels like all the games are just so tough and tight. And it always comes down to those few little plays here and there that you either make or don't make that cost you a game. So I think that's good. You know, I know there's some teams that, you know, like you mentioned, we got some teams high in the stand, some not, but I really feel like on any given night, anybody can win. And that's what the league wants.
Do you feel at this point, since you've been there, you've had some really successful seasons, and this year has been no different. You've been hovering right around first place with Tampa Bay, who are the defending Stanley Cup champions. Do you feel like your team gets undersold a little bit when it comes to talking about the elite teams in this league?
Well, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I think you guys are the media. Everyone does a great job in promoting all the teams. And in our division, Tampa Bay should be getting promoted. You know, that's just that simple. They're the cream of the crop. They're the team everybody's got to, you know, get to or get through if they want to move on. And, you know, so I would say no. I mean, until we become someone like that, then there's no right to be talking about us all that much. You know, like I think, you know, I hear our team a lot. We seem to be in there enough. And like I said, there's some good teams in our division, and Tampa is obviously the best, and they deserve everything they're getting.
How do you think you stack up against them, Rod? I mean, well, how do you look at it?
Great question. We played them. We played them a few times already this year. Mm-hmm. We got a set there where they were actually really competitive games. You know, we lost three in a row, but I felt real good about our team and our games against them. But that's until you knock them off, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're how we stack up. You know, hopefully we get a shot at them in the playoffs at some point. You know, I'm still trying to figure out my team, to be quite honest with you, because we haven't had a full group. You know, I mean, I hear a lot of other teams. The one thing I always interests me is we're missing Trocheck and Teravainen and Mrazek. And, you know, I just wonder, I'd like to see us for a good stretch with everybody to really feel how good we can be, because I just really don't know. We've played fairly well without those guys, but they're huge parts of what what we're all about. So hopefully we can get them back and get a feel, you know, for what we're all about.
Where do they stand, especially Mrazek and Trocheck? Are they close?
I wish I could say yes, you know, but that's probably wishful thinking. You know, Peter Mrazek, we thought would be back by now, but you know, those kind of injuries where you have surgeries, always, you never know how that's going to work out. And he finally, you know, last 2 days has been with us practicing. So I feel good about that. I just don't know if I could say he's going to be in anytime soon. And then Troch is, you know, he's practicing with us, but not, you know, in that yellow jersey thing where you can't touch him. So whenever I see that, I never count a guy as being close. So, you know, we're a ways away still from these guys, but again, they're really huge parts of what we're doing. And Teravainen's the same thing. So hopefully we'll get them back at some point.
It's funny how goaltending works, right, Rod? Because you go into the season and that's the area where people like us were like, well, is their goaltending good enough with Mrazek and Reimer now? And now it looks like you're rich in net because of Alex and the way he's come in and played and the way James has played, and Peter's going to eventually come back. So how does it play out then for you?
Yeah, good question. And I get asked that every day. And my answer is the honest one, which is until I have that choice to make, it's no choice. And I don't need to sweat over it, right? Like, why would I add that to my pile when it's not even the question right now? So when we get cleared and they're all three are kind of healthy and ready to go, I'll have to, you know, I'll have a tough decision, but it's obviously one that you like when you sit there and go, well, I don't know who I want to play because I got three that I like. That's going to be a good choice for us.
You know, and you talk about embarrassments of riches and the goaltending kind of changed a little bit. This has been a team that's always had a lot of really good defensemen, especially with Hamilton and Slavin and all of those players. And now you add Jake Bean. What's he been like? I know he's only played half the year, but he gives you a little bit more versatility on that blue line.
Well, it's he's learning, you know, he's and, you know, I left out Jake Gardner is injured too, and he's out. So thankfully we have Jake Bean. Like, to me, that Gartz and Bean are very similar players, and so they can run the power play, they play that kind of skilled passing game, puck moving. So when, you know, timing has been was pretty good that Jake Gardner got kind of injured, that Jake Bean was sitting here kind of waiting in the wings. So he's taken that over a little bit, and he's just a very smart player. And you know, he's not big, so he's got to be smart. You know, that's you better have that in his bag, because he's not pushing guys around. he's got anticipate, and you know, he's got some good offensive flair to him. So, you know, he's learning, and that's you know, he's going to be a good player, though. I'm pretty confident of that.
So we talk about your D, we got to bring up Dougie Hamilton. He's got a 12 game point streak as we record this, and to me he seems like one of the best passers from the blue line in the league. Like, his passes are on point, and he gets a lot of assists out of them. So what have you made of Dougie's play this season? And even more so, does he remind you of anybody that you played with or played against? I mean, this type of defenseman.
He's unique. He's unique because you're right. He is a great passer. Although the other night he iced one and it cost us a goal. We got up to play right after. And you know, it's because it was so shocking, because he's usually, like you said, on the tape. And it's very rare that he doesn't do that. He's an offensive machine in the way he thinks. Like, that's really what it is. I mean, he's got the instincts that I guess you can't teach, and that's the best way to describe it. He's you know, plays with a lot of confidence. I mean, this guy's not lacking any confidence, and he's up in the play all the time, and we like that. We promote that. He does have a great partner in Jacob Slayton that allows him to do that. And that kind of gets a little bit underrated, I think, in the success that Dougie has, because Jacob is, you know, covering there for him. And it's a good pair for us, for sure.
The guy I wanted to ask you about was Sebastian Aho. I mean, he gets a lot of publicity for how fancy he can be at times, the crazy stuff that he tries at certain times. Clearly, he's an offensive maestro. But it seems to me that his game's grown a little bit, and it's almost the foundations of his game that should be celebrated more than the flashes. And as a coach, I was curious what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, we allow the guys to play offensively. I very rarely talk about the points and the goals and the plays they make with the puck. It's usually all the stuff away from the puck, and he's taken that to heart. You know, he's really tried to develop his game to the times when he doesn't have it. And, you know, we preach it a lot. You know, most of the time on the ice, you don't have the puck, so you got to be good there too. And he's taken pride in that. And when your elite players can do that and take pride in playing 200-foot game, or however you want to call it, that only helps your group, right? And he knows that for us to be successful, he has to play that way. And I think he's really bought into that. And it's helped him all over. To your point, it's helped his offensive game too.
Right. I mean, to that point, you know, where you know the type of game he's going to play and the style that Dougie's going to play, you know, it doesn't happen all the time where a coach can have, you know, his team can be predictable to him. Is your team predictable to you in the sense of, you know, the effort you're going to get, you know, what they're going to get at the start? I look at the start of your games. You're 16-4-2 when you score the first goal. That's a lot of times this season when you've scored the first goal. So is it something to you where you have an idea going into every game? All right, this is going to be the way it goes, and we just got to adjust from here.
Well, it's another great point you're making. If that's what we expect. So generally, and we've had some games this year, and we've talked about it where we got away with it, but where I didn't know what I was watching. That's kind of what I say.
Yeah.
And when I have to come back in after the first or second, or even at the end of the game, and go, I don't know what I just watched. That's when we're not on, you know. And it's not really about the score, because sometimes our talent, we do now have enough talent when we're healthy, that will, you know, the talent will make up for some of those mistakes, and we'll get by. But that's not going to get it done in the end. So we're always about that, what you just said. It's got to look right, and it's a certain way that we play. And every coach says that, but for us especially, I think we're pretty detailed on certain things, and it has to look that way. And when we do it, we're pretty successful. So, you know, there is a way we have to play, I think, to be successful.
Rod, I wanted to go back to something you said earlier when you were talking about the off days, and you said you watch a lot of hockey and you're really impressed with the game and the way it's being played. I'm curious what's caught your eye in the last couple of weeks that you've really enjoyed, either player-wise or team-wise or anything.
Well, I think what I mean mostly is that, like, I usually you get to a point in the NHL season where you get some dud games, like, you know, where it's Groundhog Day. I mean, it is. It's just one game after another, and you can tell one team is flat. Or, you know, whatever. And I've watched a lot of games here, and I know there's a couple here and there, but for the most part, I just think the players, that hasn't happened yet. Maybe it will here in the next couple of weeks. You might see some more drop off, but it just feels like I mentioned, the intensity of the games are pretty high, and the guys have kept that going all year here. So I give them all full marks, and I'm talking every player on every team, not just my guys. It feels like every game we've played in for sure has been a battle. And I can only imagine it is going to continue that way.
Kind of makes you wonder what the playoffs are going to be like then, right? After this sprint of a season.
And you know, who knows, but I can only imagine, especially if we can start getting people in the buildings, which, you know, who knows if that's going to happen or not, but if it does, the way these guys have kind of adapted to no fans for a year, essentially, I can imagine if they actually got people in buildings, the emotion of it, what it would do to, you know, the game, it'd be pretty nice to be a part of.
Rod, before we let you go, I got to ask, we're getting close to the trade deadline. As a coach, when you look at your team, do you need anything?
You're always saying, you know, we always, first of all, think you can be better, which you can. I'm always one of those guys that doesn't like to make a lot of changes. You know, I just, you know, and I guess it's easy to say that we're doing pretty well. I mean, you know, why would you change something? But, you know, there's areas we need to get better at for sure. It all just comes down to, I think, in every team, your health. I mean, if we're healthy going into the playoffs, if, you know, hopefully we're there when that time comes, I wouldn't say we needed anything, but if you're not, then what, you know? So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what goes on. And, you know, like I said, I'm happy with my group. So if we do nothing, I'm happy. And if we're doing something, that means we're probably getting better. So that'd be good too.
Last one from me, Rod. You say you're happy with your group. I'm wondering if you've ever felt better about your group.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been happy with it, honestly, since taking the job. You know, it's I'm really lucky. I can't tell you how lucky I am, because it's, you know, every coach is going to say that, but just the leadership and the guys, the way they bought into what we're trying to do and my message and all that. Like, I've never had one day where I've had to second guess it or players come to me and complain about that. Like, it's just been everything we've been throwing at them, they've been okay, what's next? And so I'm lucky that way, you know, get to coach these guys. Pretty happy about it.
Well, Rod, this has been great. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. I know you have a lot of options on your day off in Columbus, and you chose to spend it with us, so that's great.
You guys timed it perfect. Thank you.
Always good to catch up with Rod Brendamore, Sean. Really interesting stuff from the Carolina Hurricanes coach. What I find very interesting is we talk about the trade deadline, right? And he doesn't sound like a guy that wants to change much at all with his mix. And frankly, why should he? To be honest with you, I mean, that team's rolling. They're good. They're a cup contender. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, they're right there in the Central. And you know, they've had a ton of injuries. You know, we go into this year and we talk about their goaltending not being good enough. And then one of their goalies gets hurt and you're like, oh, my God, that's the end. Mm-hmm. It's all over. And, you know, I think all of this is going to serve the Carolina Hurricanes well. You know, they got a couple of guys now that they know more about. They have a bigger book on, you know, Ned in goal and Jake Bean, you know, and Rod talked a little bit about Jake in his interview. And, you know, depth will never hurt you in the playoffs. And he shouldn't want to change. They're going to add Trocheck back into that mix. I don't think there's a team in the Central, and that's a pretty good division. I don't think there's a team that's looking at the Carolina Hurricanes and being, I hope we meet them in the playoffs.
No.
Because I'll tell you what, you may beat them, but the team that you got to play next is going to be rubbing their hands, because you're going to be a broken team by the time it's over.
And how big is it to finish first in that division? Right?
It's huge.
It's huge. Just so big, because the top three are set. So if you're Carolina and you finish first, well, now you don't have to play Florida or Tampa in the first round. You know, if you're Tampa and you finish first, you don't have to worry about Florida, Carolina, you know, it's so big to finish first in that division. But look, I mean, I really like that team. Like we said at the top here, I think that team plays to the identity of the way their coach played when he had his long NHL career. And you're right, they're going to get Trocheck back. They're going to get Teravainen back. They're going to get Mrazek back. They're just going to get better. And they're also a little bit more playoff tested now too, to the point where you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's not a surprise anymore with the Carolina Hurricanes, a very good team. And oh, by the way, Hamilton and Slavin are maybe, you know, among the top 2D in the league, really.
Yeah, for sure. And if you want to feel old, by the way, speaking of Carolina Hurricanes, they're big on the, on the lacrosse goal. They all like to try it. Yeah, I wanted to ask Rod in the interview if he's ever tried it. But the real lacrosse goal, the Mike Legg goal, 25 years old this week.
25 years old.
Yeah. Wow. And I don't know if you saw the new one. And I saw the video clip, and I'm not sure exactly who did it. But one of the players pretended he was doing the lacrosse goal. The goalie came over, put his shoulder against the net, but he actually left the puck behind the net, and the other guy was coming the other way, and he just took it empty net wraparound.
Oh, okay.
It always amazes me, like, just the creativity that players have when they fool around and then they're able to introduce it into the game.
Yeah, it's in the moment, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's in the moment of the game, that split second, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to try this right now.
And I'll tell you what, like, there's a lot of things we've missed in the last year. I miss practice. Mm-hmm. I miss sitting in a rink and just watching professionals do stuff.
Yes.
Like, work on stuff, creativity. And then you'll see it like 2 months later and you'll be like, I saw him do that in practice. Like, and I wondered why he was doing that. And then that's why, right? Whether it's shooting to miss the net and where it comes out. Like, I don't know if casual fans are aware of all these things. Like, sometimes you can go to practice and you'll watch a defenseman and he'll miss the net 30 times in a row. And you're like, oh, that guy really stinks. And the whole time he's trying to figure out where the puck's going to come off the boards to his forward. And then all of a sudden it happens in the game. And at the split second, you're like, oh, he missed the net. And it was a fortunate bounce. And the other guy put
it
in. Right. Yeah, it wasn't a fortunate bounce. That was 100 shots over 7 practices that figured that out.
Just as an aside, I will never forget, I think it was the 2010 playoffs, Washington-Montreal. I watched in practice. Mike Camilleri is going through cones, skating through cones, stick handling through cones, like it was easy. Like it was the easiest thing he ever did. And then Hal Gill tried to do it, and cones are getting bounced all over the place. The puck ends up on the other side of the ice. It was, just as an aside, I mean, you watch guys do it, and then the other guys try something, and it doesn't always work out. But anyway, that's a little aside. Colorado Vegas is coming up. We got two. Colorado Vegas Thursday and Saturday. 2 points separate these two teams in the West Division. And Colorado's been really good. 7-0-1 since Nathan MacKinnon came back in the lineup. No surprise. MacKinnon's back, obviously. Pacioretty's not back. But this is going to be – these are the top two teams. There's no question about it. And I think this is – is it going to tell us much? I don't know. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see – these next two games between these two teams as they battle for that first place spot, because again, same type of thing, right? You want to get first in that division. Minnesota has been really good. St. Louis has been okay, but you don't want to have to, you know, you don't want to have to deal with, let's say, Minnesota playing in XL Energy Center where they don't lose anymore. Right.
Yeah, no. And I think the biggest difference between these two teams, and I don't know if this weekend tells us anything, is the goaltending, right? Yeah. Now that Robin Lehner's back, If you're a neutral coach and you got to pick rosters and you're looking and you're like, hey, you know what? That Cale Makar is pretty good. That MacKinnon's pretty good. I don't have a backup goalie.
No.
Now on the other side, I got Lehner and Fleury, and I still have, you know, Stone, Pacioretty, all of those guys, Petrangelo. I'm picking the goalies.
Well, I think we talk trade deadline. I mean, I think Colorado – They didn't do it last year, right? To go out and get a goalie, and they ended up playing Michael Hutchinson, you know, in the playoffs because Grubauer and Francois got hurt. Now they got Grubauer, who's been really good, but again, injury prone at times, right? Injury prone goaltender, and Jonas Johansson, who has no experience really. They need need is a strong word, but if I'm Joe Sakic. And again, I'll reiterate, if I'm a general manager and I see Joe Sakic calling me, I'm not picking up the phone because he's going to fleece me, because that's what he does. But anyway, they need goaltending. And I think they could look at do you look at a Detroit, you know, to try and get a Jonathan Bernier, pluck him out of there? Do you try to take advantage of Carolina's situation if they have to throw one guy on waivers or whatever it may be? Or are they going to, you know, stick with the three if it's Reimer or somebody like that? But I look at Colorado and I say, that's the one area we've been saying it for a long time. They're going to go out and win a cup this year. I just think that they need a little bit more depth in net on a just-in-case basis for when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you want to finish first in that division, which, you know, you said is so important, again, just think of the workload that's coming up. And so you have Grubauer, and he's been great. He should be in the Vezina conversation. Mm-hmm. But how often are you going to play him?
right
down the stretch. Now, like, again, Pete DeBoer looks at his team, and Marc-Andre Fleury was the MVP for over a month of the league while Lehner was out. Now Lehner comes back, and he was the number one before he got hurt, before he had his concussion. And just as an aside, I don't think we talked about this from the time he came back. Kudos to Robin Lehner again. He comes out, terrific. He says, look, I had a concussion. I'm not dumb. I've heard the rumors that I'm back in rehab, that, you know, all of these things are happening. I had a concussion. I know the team doesn't want me to say it, but I'm in a good place. And a concussion can really mess with you mentally, but I have a great team of psychologists and everything else. And this is where I'm at. And I'm going to be completely honest with you, because I have to be. And I'm going to, again, advocate for all those people that can't advocate for themselves, that are pushed to the margins of society because they can't say, I'm a professional athlete and I have a problem and I'm going to get it dealt with this flotilla of professionals that I can either pay or the team's going to provide for me. God bless him and the works he's doing in that area. And we need more people to do that, especially at this time. So I thought that was great. But I just, when I look at everything, I think those two teams cancel out a lot, but not in net.
Not in net. No.
Huge down the stretch this year, and it'll be huge in the playoffs, because we talked about this a little with Rod Brindamore. You're going to play every other day to get into the playoffs, and then for 2 months you're going to play every other day already beat to crap from playing every other day for these last 2 months.
That's why I'm so curious what the playoffs look like this year, because I mean, we know the attrition it takes in the playoffs regularly, and everything, it, you know, the toll it takes on guys' body to go the distance. Just to go the distance in this regular season is taking a lot out of guys physically and more than ever mentally. So, and that plays a role in how you are physically at times too. So that's going to be, it's the team. Again, we said it last year when they got into the bubble, the team that had the mental fortitude to get through that and win in the end, there was no asterisk at all. If you're going to put an asterisk on it, it was going to be for a positive instead of a negative. Tampa did that. And I think you can say something very similar for this year, for the team that gets through it in the playoffs. You want to put an asterisk on it, do it, because it's all for the positive, because this is another very, very challenging Stanley Cup to win.
Yeah, and I'm going to shift gears somewhat abruptly, and we're going to go to the North Division really quickly.
Yes.
And I have 2 points to make. The first one, and everybody should listen up right now, because this is not going to happen very often, but I was wrong. A couple of weeks ago, I gave Connor McDavid the gears pretty good. Toronto came in. He was invisible. And I said, best player in the league doesn't do that. Let's not have this conversation that it's a slam dunk. What's he done since those 3 games in Toronto? It's been 9 games. He's got 20 points. They've been shut down this week because Montreal had a little bit of the COVID issue, and they're staying in Montreal. And they come out of that. And who do they play on Saturday? They play the Toronto Maple Leafs again. And I think it's going to be a little bit of a different story. But I was wrong about Connor McDavid. And I'm setting the record straight here. And I'm falling on my sword. So, like I said, it's not going to happen very often. I'm not wrong very often. But I swung and I missed in a major, major way on this hot take. Well, it was a lukewarm one at best.
Okay. So, but here's the thing. You never said he wasn't good.
No, I just said the best player in the league doesn't do that.
Yeah, and the best, and you know what? He did. And at the time, you were looking at it and saying, all right, well, he's obviously responded very well. But see, I think Connor McDavid is the most talented player. We can argue this all the time. Show it to me. Show me when it matters. Get the opportunity, which he hasn't had very often. But now that you're going to have the opportunity, prove it. Show me when it matters that you are the best player in the league. I have no doubt that he can do it. No doubt that he can do it.
And this to me was a moment, right? Their season was about to spiral out. And he said, okay, you know, I was bad. The team was bad. We lost to 3 different goalies. I didn't score any points. And he answered. And so we talk about the scoring there. And then on the other side of the Battle of Alberta, you have the Calgary Flames, who, you know, fired their coach, brought in Daryl Sutter, and said, you know, we need to do this to make the playoffs. They've been a middling team since. Last night they lost again to the Ottawa Senators. They can't score goals. Our colleague Tim Campbell actually spoke to Daryl Sutter one-on-one. That story's going up today. And the most interesting thing I thought he said was, you know, we need to do some things differently. You know, he wants to play a certain way. I don't know that his roster is built to play that way. And he talked about a lot about Johnny Gaudreau, who's not having a bad year. You know, you would think when I looked it up to talk about it, because you've heard so much about, well, Johnny Gaudreau, he's got to get going. He's got 25 points. Like, it's not like it's been a lost season, but he's not the 99-point player he was a couple of years ago. And you know, Darryl was like, he just needs to shoot more. He just needs to be more involved. But to me, watching him, he seems lost. He doesn't know what to do. He's not a Darryl Sutter straight up and down player. You know, Sam Bennett is, and maybe he's going to be better now. Milan Lucic is going to be better because this is the game that he wants to play. Johnny Gaudreau does not want to play. I'll get it to the blue line, dump it in, and go chase it. I mean, he's a zone entry machine like Connor McDavid. And that's, I think there's a voice in his head, and it's a very loud and gravelly voice that says, dump that puck in. Do not skate it over the blue line and turn it over. And he just, so I'm really interested. They need goals. And if their skill players are thinking instead of doing, that's going to be a problem down the stretch.
He's got 2 goals in 8 games with Darryl Sutter, no assists. Johnny Gaudreau, 2 goals, no assists in 8 games. Monahan's got 2 goals, 1 assist in 8 games with Darryl Sutter. They just lost to Philip Gustafson, who's the fourth goalie. Twice they lost to Philip Gustafson, who's the fourth goalie on one of the league's bottom teams in the league. This, you know, in one of the team bottom teams in the league this year, scoring 2 goals in 2 games. They have a big problem in Calgary. It's a big problem. The coach does not, the roster does not fit the coach. It doesn't. And unless they turn it around in the next 20 some odd games this season, they're going to have to make big changes in the offseason. If they're bought into Darryl Sutter as being their coach, they have to make changes. Gaudreau's got to go. Monahan might have to go too. You build your team around Matthew Tkachuk and his style of play, because that's the style of play Darryl Sutter wants to play.
Yeah, but you know what? If I'm Edmonton, I don't want to see them in the playoffs. I don't want to play a 7-game series against a Darryl Sutter team, especially with some of the weapons he has on that team, Milan Lucic, Tkachuk, guys like that, yeah, who are just going to punish you over 7 games and try and win 2-1. And you know, last night, one of the goals, and I forget who scored it, went off of somebody's pants, right? It was shot from the point, Calgary. And, you know, they're like, oh, maybe Milan tipped it. Maybe this happened. It went off of somebody's butt.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about those Kings teams, right?
Yeah.
They had a lot of talent. They won a lot of games with ping pong shots.
They
did. You know,
yeah.
3 overtimes against Chicago where nothing happened until somebody shot a puck and it hit 4 skates and that it went by. And a lot of that had to do with Crawford and Quick and how good they were. But it was just a game of margins, right? You were just looking for that one break. And if Calgary can play in the playoffs like that, you know, they have 20 games to figure out Darryl, and they can get into the playoffs and they have that game perfected. Now all of a sudden you're playing 7 1-goal games. That's not a lot of fun.
I wouldn't want to see them in the playoffs either if they get in, because they're going to get in rolling. That's the point, you know, like that's the thing there. And if they actually make the playoffs, they're going in rolling, playing a style of hockey that we don't see from them right now. You know, they're averaging 2.25 goals per game under Darryl Sutter. Their power play is under 14% under Darryl Sutter. They're not scoring. They can keep it out. Their goalie's good. Their D is solid. They play defensive side. They could keep it out, but they're not scoring enough to win. And if they don't, and they don't get in the playoffs, they'll be in the draft lottery. And I'll tee you up for that. How about that? You like that tee up for our last little point here?
I do. And to me, like, it's much ado about nothing.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, look, there's been some changes. It's basically set up so the worst teams in the league have a better opportunity to draft higher, which I think is right. But it's also put in a safeguard against repeated tanking. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, so you won't see the Rangers. What happened with the Rangers again? They won't pick first and second in back-to-back years. It's going to be very difficult for that to happen. So I think people are resistant to change, and I understand the complexity of this change and how, you know, you're going to have to carry over finishes in previous draft lotteries, and, you know, that at times will only appeal to the most hardcore fan. But every year when you get close to the draft lottery, everything gets explained to you. You don't need to know now. like it's the week before the draft lottery. Your team's involved in the lottery. Somebody explains to you how your team could finish first, and you go with that.
So the thing about the draft lottery for me is, you know, it goes from three drawings to two. So the team that finishes last now in the system that we've had can drop to fourth, right? Now they'll drop to third. And it's happened three times, Colorado, Ottawa, and Detroit, where, you know, since 2016, where the team that finished last did drop to fourth. And I remember being, I think I was in the Amalie Arena in the press room there at Amalie Arena, and Jim Devolano from the Red Wings was after the draft lottery and they dropped the fourth, and he's just screaming and yelling about the draft lottery, how they can't get lucky and all that. So it does, you know, help out those teams, I guess, in a little bit. And you can't move up more than 10 spots either. So if you finish 12th, you're not winning, right? You're not getting the top pick. You can get number two, but you're not getting the top pick. But the one thing I will say to that, and the last thing I'll say about the draft lottery, because you're right, I mean, we don't have to really focus in on it too hard right now, is if this system existed, Colorado would have dropped to third, right, in 2017. Maybe they think twice about picking Cale Makar, who they picked fourth because they dropped to fourth in 2017. So I don't know, just something to consider too, because you also have to make the most of your draft pick when you do have an opportunity to get it. And it's not just about, oh, we get to pick higher. Look, I mean, Cale Makar is a pretty good number four pick.
Yeah, and there's been some number one picks recently that haven't been that great. So, look, it's stuff to talk about, right? Yeah. Like, you sit down at the bar when we are able to sit down at the bar again, and you have this argument, or you have this argument here, and that's what fans do, right? Which is better? Which is worse? Why do they do this? All of those things. And in the end, I don't think it really matters. You need to, like you said, you need to hit on your opportunities, and the draft is only one piece of that. So, like I said, there was a lot of rage about it this week, and I don't know how well placed that is. I always find it amazing with any change, and I think hockey is the most traditional sport of all, but with any change, how they just, everybody's like, oh, they changed it again. Like, I'm just comfortable with this. And so many of them have been so good. And I think about our younger fans, right? Like, my son's 16, and we just finished watching. I don't even know if you're aware of this. There's a thing called fan controlled football. No. And it airs on Twitch, and you vote for everything. You vote for the colors of the teams, the logos, you get to pick every play. It's like playing Madden. Like, you put the play in on your phone and they run it on the TV, whichever play wins, and they just finished their season. And it was so confusing to me as I watched it with my son, but he loved it.
Right.
He's the fan of the future.
He is.
Like, he watched it on a system that I don't even understand in Twitch. I'm like, can we switch to the hockey game? And he's like, no, this is on Twitch. Like, you can't just switch to the hockey game. And you know, was playing along on his phone and all these. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, when I'm old and I'm trying to tell people about Cam Neely and back in the good old days, and these are the kids that are going to be buying jerseys and watching games, and we need to cater to these people.
Yeah, you're right.
So the change is good.
Young fan, no question about it. Yeah,
change is good.
Change is good. Change is good. And this draft lottery change is, it's going to be significant for a couple of teams. That's what it's going to come down to. It's going to be significant for a couple of teams, but we'll see how big of a difference it really does make. But you're right. I mean, anytime there's change, it does get talked about a lot, especially when the Board of Governors get involved and they have to vote on it. So we do have the draft lottery changes. But more importantly, got a lot of hockey coming up every night, obviously. You got Vegas, Colorado, like I mentioned, but like we talked about before. And you got the trade deadline coming up on April 12th. And we'll continue to hammer the trade deadline until it passes. And then we analyze from there. So this was a good one. Great to get Rod Brindamore on. And we'll do it again next week, right, Sean, with more trade deadline talk.
Yeah, and before we go, just a quick shout out. This weekend, the Isabel Cup is being played. It was delayed in Lake Placid over a while ago because of COVID outbreaks. They've reconvened in Boston. They're going to play at the Bruins practice arena on Friday and Saturday. The games are on NBC, SN, and if you haven't seen the NWHL or the Dream Gap that's been going on, they played in New York and Chicago. Check it out. It's really good hockey, and you know, it's a championship, and these women are going to play really hard this weekend, and they're getting the showcase that they deserve. And so if you're a hockey junkie like me or like you, and you have an opportunity maybe between NHL games or during commercials, check it out, because it should be some good hockey.
Definitely. They deserve your support too. And one last thing before we go, we have to give our condolences out to the family of Bobby Plager and the St. Louis Blues family, all of St. Louis, really. A legend in St. Louis tragically passed away yesterday in a car accident. And it's just awful. But we here give our condolences out to the Plager family and the Blues, right, Sean? I mean, brutal news. And that's, I mean, he was a legend there, and they loved him, and a life of the party type of guy.
Yeah, the whole family. All three brothers played for the Blues, and, you know, were so instrumental in those expansion years. And you know, to me, one of my fondest memories of the 2019 Cup was seeing some of those Blues alumni, and Bobby was front and center, you know, just celebrating that, because they had worked so hard for it. They had gone to those three Cup finals as an expansion team and got swept each time, because they weren't in the same class as some of those original six teams. They played Montreal twice and Boston once. And, you know, to see what that meant, and to see the outpouring from players that played in that organization that are either there now or are retired or have moved on to other teams. You know, David Backes tweeted about, you know, how Bobby Plager taught people what it meant to be a part of that franchise. And you know, a great storyteller. I had an opportunity to talk to him a few times for stories I was doing. And but most of the time I just needed one quote, and 40 minutes later, you know, you're sitting at the table just laughing away, and you know, you're like, oh, I got to go right. But wait, he's going to tell another story. Or if you got around somebody else in that organization that knew all his best stories, that was the best. Cause then they would just be like, you know, like Louis Korak or our correspondent, or, you know, any of those other guys that knew him well, Jeremy Rutherford with the Athletic, they'd be like, well, tell this story. Mm-hmm. What about this story? And you'd be like, oh my God, I got to go do some work, but I'm going to hang around a little longer. And those are the guys. And again, you talk about generational stuff. Those are the guys. I don't know much about that era. So when you get a chance to talk to those guys, you know, in 30 years from now, it's going to be the guys that are playing now. When you get a chance to talk to those guys, you should never pass it up. So a hugely valuable resource and a well-loved person in St. Louis is gone, and it's a sad day for all of us.
Yeah, well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. It's the beauty of the game, the characters in the game, and he will certainly be missed, certainly in the St. Louis community. This was fun, though. Rod Brendamore, we thank him for jumping on. Sean will do it again next week, and everybody stay safe out there.